Wait, so we're going back to the usual way now? Is that the deal? All right, I'm going to start. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Ryssdal.
And I'm Molly Wood. This feels so much better already.
I know, right? That's just the way it's supposed to go. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, which last week we flipped the order. Molly went first, and it messed us both up. Anyway, tech, culture, the economy, and of course, we could not do it without you, because none of us is as smart as all of us. That's the tagline.
I should say, I'd greatly appreciate the effort at equity in terms of the introduction. But yeah, it turns out this feels so much more natural.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about social media. Yeah. I know this may come as a surprise, but it's a popular topic. But just hang with us, because this is actually really fun and interesting. We all know, of course, that social platforms curate what you see online. I, for example, have noticed that Instagram has started auto-following me to people, which is going to drive me away from it even faster than Cambridge Analytica drove me away from Facebook. We know that they examine your data. They present you the worldview that they assume you want to see. We have talked about filter bubbles on this podcast. We have talked about President Trump's allegations that Google and Twitter have an anti-conservative bias. There are, of course, all kinds of these bubbles that you can be in. And they come not just, you know, from politics, but from where you grew up or what you do for work or how old you are, whether you have kids, who your friends are, all of that stuff.
And the thing is that it's tough for any of us to admit that we have filter bubbles, even though we do. And we like to think we can get out of them really easily or pop them, if you will, to continue the bubble analogy. But it's actually trickier to do than you might think. And we've all got them, me and Molly as well. And so today what we're going to do is look at ours via Twitter.
Yes, it is. It was a terrifying experiment. We called up John Keegan, a visual journalist, and it's sort of like navel gazing, but way scarier. A couple of years ago, when John Keegan was working at the Wall Street Journal, he created this online visual project called Red Feed, Blue Feed,
which was amazing.
It's amazing. We have a link to it on the Make Me Smart website. Basically, you click on a topic, healthcare or the economy or whatever, and you can see how a conservative person's Facebook feed and a liberal person's Facebook feed look depending on the issue. And spoiler alert, it's different.
Yes, it is. So what we did was we gave them a bunch of information about our Twitter feeds, who we follow and number of tweets and all kinds of other stuff. We both use it a lot, right? And so it was sort of an equal ground, equal territory thing. And let's just play the tape. John Keegan, here he is.
Yeah, I feel like I know you guys. I've been deep in your tweets now for a week or two.
It's a little weird, man. It's a little weird, but all right, go ahead.
A little strange. Using some command line tools in the computer, using a little bit of code, I was able to kind of convert your very dense JavaScript object notation, which is JSON files, into comma-separated values. So basically, like, strip that all out into basically something that could be put into a spreadsheet or a database.
Gotcha.
I imported that stuff into MySQL, which is my database of choice.
There's a lot of computer talk going on here. I'm just saying.
I'm loving it.
For a non-computer guy, I'm a little intimidated, but keep going.
So I went through, grabbed all of your tweets. I also wanted all of the people who you follow. Mm-hmm. I was less concerned with who follow you because you guys have large audiences. You have a lot of people who are following you guys. Obviously, you're popular. But I was more interested in this question of kind of like, are you guys in your own echo chambers? Mm-hmm. What are the voices you're listening to? And to do that, I really needed to know who you guys follow. Kai, I was really surprised you follow very few people, under 400 people.
So
interesting.
Why is that interesting and surprising?
Well, because Molly follows about 1,200 people, and I follow several thousand. And it's kind of interesting. Like, the thing that I've noticed talking to people is that everyone has a different, kind of method for how they use it. Some people are kind of passive. They sit back. They don't tweet much. They just want to take in the news. They use it as a news reader. So I was interested in how you guys use it. I noticed looking at your feeds, you guys both disproportionately follow journalists and news outlets.
Yeah.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Everybody can use Twitter any way they want to. If you look at the kind of just domains in like public life, there's a lot of different voices out there. There's voices from companies, marketing, and customer service people, on Twitter, often people will try to cut the lines on the phone by complaining about their flight to Delta, and they'll get an immediate response on Twitter. Then there's a world of ideas, the people who are, in opinion and There's also a lot of fun happening, too. I think, Molly, you follow a lot more what I would consider fun accounts. Cute dog pictures in some cases, which is great. I like to have some fun in my Twitter feed. It can be a pretty dark place.
I know. Poor Kai only had like one. There's only one thing labeled fun in Kai's follow.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Kai was following a few pilots, too. I noticed you had a lot of pilots in your feed.
I have 24 fun.
I've got
and you
one
only
fun.
Have one fun.
That pretty much sums up the relationship right there. Molly, 24 fun. Kai,
does.
One fun. There we go. We're done. Well, all right. Since we're on me, or we started on me anyway, what else do we know about me and my filter bubble?
So, Kai, looking at who you follow,
it's
a short list, and I was able to manually kind of go through and classify, I think, about 70% of the people that you follow. So it's tricky. There's a lot of slashes in people's bios. There's no field that you type in that says definitively, I am a person of this category. Hmm. You know, people just say, I'm a founder slash blogger slash podcaster. Yeah. So I kind of took an approach of basically saying, well, what kind of general domain do these people fall into? You might have, you know, defense, military, cyber, elected official, film. So I was surprised that you had very few elected officials, very few people from government at all represented in your feed. You mostly, had a lot of people from news. You had some economists. Mm-hmm. I can understand that in your line of work, and some corporate executives. Mm-hmm. But it kind of trails off quickly after that. One other thing that was interesting, too, in both of your cases, you both don't follow Donald Trump's account. But you follow the Real Press Secretary account, which...
Oh, come on. That's such a great account, right?
It's a great bot. And what it does for anybody who doesn't know is it takes every checks every 5 minutes, any tweet of Donald Trump's, it reformats it into an official-looking press release that came from the White House. The idea being you should take his words as official policy.
Also, for the record, Sean Spicer, when he was the president's chief spokesman, said the president's tweets are official White House policy. And the Department of Justice has said the same thing,
exactly.
too. So, you know...
I would still recommend following Trump's account directly just to have a primary source coming straight from that official account. You don't know what someone could do with a bot. So it's a good practice when you're doing this stuff to not rely upon a bot that is retweeting that stuff. You never know really what's happening. But just taking a glance at the outlets that you guys are both following, they kind of fall somewhere in the like center to a little bit left in some cases. Hmm. I don't see a lot of voices from the right. From conservative media on there. So if I had one recommendation for the groups of voices that you follow, if you want to have a more diverse, kind of set of voices on Twitter, is to use Twitter lists. Twitter lists are a fantastic tool that you can find all these really well-curated lists out there. Robert Scoble has a fantastic, very carefully organized set of lists about venture capitalists and founders and leaders in technology. You want to, in one click, follow all the people who are doing machine learning or computer vision. You can quickly add them to your feed. Slate has this really great collection of accounts to follow. It's like tweets from the right, a collection of voices that are kind of in the center right. They're legitimate right-wing voices. They're not on the fringe. You can add those voices to your feed. And if you find it overwhelming, which definitely can happen, you can go turn that off with one click. And it's not a big deal. And we've been trained by the design of these products, especially Facebook. It's been designed to only show you what you want and to downplay the stuff that you don't want to see. And that habit really sticks. So when you do see that stuff, and we know from Pew Research that liberal users are more likely to unfriend someone when they post counter-attitudinal content, stuff that offends them.
Is that right?
And conservatives were less likely to have those friends in the first place. They have a more homogenous group of friends on Facebook. So it's a good practice to be able to at least – I recommend for people try it once. Go in, add those extra voices, and see what the experience is like. You know, when you look, no matter which side of the spectrum you're on, there's a whole other ecosystem of news that you're not familiar with.
So how did we – you know, if you had to grade us from 1 to 10 on our diversity of voices, how did we do you think?
Generally, you're following mainstream publications. You know, that's fine. You know, Molly, I think you had more government voices represented in your collection of people that you follow. I think C-SPAN has a collection of lists that are basically every sitting member of Congress, every cabinet at the, you know, for the administration. So, you know, Department of Interior and, you know, Department of Commerce. That stuff's important to have. So I would add some of those to the mix as well. And then I also recommend like finding your best like local government sources as well. It's amazing how people are using Twitter now to communicate, often much faster than anything that goes on a website these days. If there's a power outage in your town or an emergency, Molly, I saw you were following like some fire departments. I think that kind of stuff is really, really helpful.
Huh.
Also local news. Whenever there's breaking news in an area, some, you know, crisis that's happening, Twitter really shines. It can also be, as we know, a problematic place for that. But if you want to see that information as fast as it comes out, Twitter's hard to beat.
So to that question, and we should say here, you did a whole report, and there's all kinds of great stuff in there about, you know, what time of day we tweet, and our most popular tweets, and all of that stuff, which is super, super cool. But let me ask you the put up or shut up question, right? Do you think that social media and Twitter specifically are responsible for the decline of Western civilization?
I think people can handle that themselves. Yeah. No, it's not really my as a journalist, I'm not really going to weigh in on that. But I would basically say that these tools are kind of what you get out of them, what you put into them, you know. And if there's not really a standard way to use all of these tools on Facebook, you could use it to follow the most hateful voices, or you could follow your grandkids' pictures, you know. The same is true for Twitter and for these other platforms that are out there. People don't really give enough effort to understand the strengths and weaknesses of these platforms and how they can be used. There's often a lot of really interesting stuff in there that people aren't taking advantage of, like the Twitter lists that could really make the experience much more positive.
Well, it is so interesting you call it a tool. I use it a lot, and that's not how I think of it. I don't know how I think of it now that I think about it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys, how do you use Twitter? What's your pattern?
I'm going to say it's likely constant. I mean, I try to have rules around Twitter, and so I think I am attempting to use it more like a tool as opposed to sort of a combination of tool, crutch, you know, and hobby. Which I think is the danger of Twitter in my life.
Right.
And like, I don't stress eat, I stress Twitter.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm sort of more, I'm more of a, hey, what's going on out there thing. And I use it to find out what's going on.
I was curious about that too, because one of the things I checked was to see how many, when you're tweeting, what percentage of the tweets that you were creating were original thoughts, like kind of original tweets, like just the word, just a little statement out there, which is the original idea behind Twitter, right? Like, you know, going to get some Chinese food. You know, if you go back and look at the original Twitter founders' first tweets, that's kind of what it was. And they've gotten so complex. So you guys both have a substantial amount of tweets that are kind of just a thought, which I think is great. You also reply a lot, and you look like you do actually use it for conversation, which is great. I think you can get a lot out of that. And then sometimes those conversations are best done in a direct message.
Yeah. I feel like one other big discrepancy, like there weren't a lot of huge discrepancies between the way that Kai and I use Twitter other than how many people we follow. The other big discrepancy is retweets. Kai's got like 6 times more retweets than I do, almost 18,000 to my 3,000.
What does
that tell us? How do we dissect him that way?
It's a good point. And, you know, I see that, you know, the other thing I thought was interesting was, you know, which may be connected to this was Kai, you use TweetDeck, majority of the time.
Yeah.
And that's, I use that too. And that's like, you know, mainlining Twitter. It's like a really intense experience. It's visually kind of overwhelming for a lot of people. So, I do think a lot about that experience. There was a big difference there. And, you know, also in volume, I mean, you know, Kai, you tweet basically twice as much as Molly, it seems, about 12.8 tweets per day, right? Versus Molly's 5.7. And you have twice as many tweets, even though she had a 2-year head start. She's been on the platform longer than you. You also, Kai, you don't use the like button or the favorite, which is the little heart.
I think the like button is stupid. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that from you.
Clearly. You clearly think that. You have 124 only. Yeah.
But Molly, do you use it like a bookmarking tool?
No, actually, I don't use it like a bookmarking tool at all. I think I'm just like validating, and that's it. Because in fact, I almost never go back. And when I do, I'm always like, why did I like like that.
Well, they're talking about getting rid of that now.
Well, thank God, because it's stupid. And, you know, the 124 times I've used it, I would say 123 of them were, oh, I'm going to bookmark this with a like and then go back and look at it. And, of course, I never
do. You never do.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's how I initially started, much the way I actually do bookmark things on my Kindle all the time and never, ever go back and look at them.
Right.
But, no, I don't know. I like it. And also, I shouldn't even say this out loud, but you can send some subtle messages with a well-planned like.
Do you think people actually pay attention to likes?
It's a thing.
One of the big takeaways from this whole thing is people probably don't realize how many signals they're sending out using their account in a public fashion. There's a great account called Trump's Alert, I think is what it's called. And it's a bot that this British journalist wrote. And what it does is it follows a whole bunch of people in Trump's orbit. You know, Jared, Ivanka, his kids, and, you know, all these cabinet secretaries, Scaramucci's on there. And anytime that any of those users on that list follow someone or stop following someone or like something or retweet something, that gets published on this feed. And it's really interesting. There have been a lot of really surprising examples. There was one time where Trump liked a Wall Street Journal story about Steve Wynn, a really, you know, kind of damning story about him and sexual assault. And it was very puzzling. Well, why would he like that? You know what I mean? You have a lot of moments like that. And it's like people are watching. That stuff is visible. I mean, there's way more there than what you see. When you look at the actual anatomy of a tweet, the JavaScript object that makes up the payload of a single tweet, it's like 50 or 60 lines of metadata. It's not just a little piece of text.
That's insane.
Anytime you put a hashtag in or mention someone with an at sign, it breaks those things down into nested, entities. And, you get by looking through the kind of anatomy of a tweet, you get a sense of how complex the platform has become.
Love it. Could probably geek out on this all day. Probably shouldn't.
Yeah, we could, but things to do.
No. Oh, I noticed one other problem. Neither one of you are following me. Last problem. Yeah. So correct that, and you should have a perfectly balanced feed.
It was totally fascinating. Totally fascinating. A little painful. I think maybe you thought it was more painful than I thought it was. I don't know.
No, I thought it was going to be more painful, actually. And then I was relieved to discover. I was really, clearly we're in a journalism bubble. That's not a surprise.
Yep.
I did 3 action items as a result.
Oh, wow. Okay. What?
Well, I didn't know anything. 3. I started following him, obviously.
So lame.
Like, no pressure. I started following the actual real Donald Trump Twitter feed.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep. And then I followed all those. So, by the way, he created infographics about our tweets.
All kinds of cool graphics. Yeah.
Which is amazing. I'm very embarrassed about my most popular tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Which basically just like has the F word in it. It's not even like a real tweet. But we're gonna publish them all at makemesmart.org, and they're fantastic. And one of the things he did was he recommended a whole bunch of lists for us to follow so that we could, expand our universe of sources. Yeah. And so I started following all those lists, but here's the other embarrassing thing I have to say. I don't know how to use them.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask, tech person, but I guess I can't ask you this question. Hello?
You didn't either? You don't know either?
Well, no, I don't know either, which is why I didn't do anything about it, because I had a list that I don't know how to do it.
Oh, what? Hold on. What? I just figured it out.
No. You get me to confess, and then what is that?
No, well, I also realized maybe I should just look at Twitter really quick. And click on some stuff while we're talking, because that's a good way to do a podcast.
You do that much more than I do. Once I get in here, I'm not messing around with the computer. I'm not.
I have a goldfish brain. No one ever does.
Squirrel.
No one ever does.
All right. Anyway, so let's talk about how you get out of your filter bubbles. Yeah. Tell us how you try to get out of your filter bubbles, if you do. And if you're warm and happy in your filter bubble, tell us why you think that's okay. Because honestly, not to be judgy, but it's not okay. Send us a voicemail, makemesmart at marketplace.org. Should we talk about the Facebook group? Because you can put stuff
there. Oh, yes, definitely. Our Facebook group. So many good conversations happen on the Facebook group, which was previously like top secret and created by Make Me Smart listeners.
Yeah.
And we have absorbed it into the Borg.
Yes.
And encourage you to check it out, because it is really, it is smart. It is well moderated by the group. And we're watching, and you can suggest ideas that will show up on the show.
All right. Come back in a minute.
Time for a break.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
All right, we're back. True confessions time. This is not actually happening the week that you're listening to it because I am on vacation in a far-flung land where I am unplugged from everything, including Twitter, by the way. I'm taking Twitter off my phone, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh,
I am,
are you?
No, I am for reals. For reals. I swear, because I need to not be plugged in. I'm taking email off. If you need to get a hold of me, text me. And those of you out there who have my phone number, text me. Just say hi. But otherwise, I'm out.
Oh, good for you.
So we're not doing any news. We're not doing any fixes. We're not doing anything.
This is not a news or a fix, but it is just last night, the night before we were recording this, I was reading the Bob Woodward book, Fear, and there was this whole section about President Trump and Twitter. And the one thing that I found super fascinating that I am now fixated on is that Trump apparently downloaded, and this is after he's in the White House and people are like, please, we beg you, stop tweeting. And he was like, nope, it's my thing. It's my megaphone. He apparently downloaded all of his most successful tweets, like printed them out, made a study of what worked, which ones had the most likes and the most retweets. It is the most Trump research on any single topic that is described in the book. And so lest you think that it is accidental. And in fact, the conclusion that was drawn was that the most incendiary tweets were the most popular and that was the pattern that would be repeated.
So for the doggone record, I'm pretty sure at some point like a year ago when this administration first started, we had a whole conversation in which my line was he is doing this to distract from other stuff. It's not that he's a just crazy person with a Twitter account.
Yep.
It's that he's thinking this through.
Yep.
And I would just like to say, as my dad used to say to me, quod erat demonstrandum.
Yeah.
Boom.
Which is Latin for Kai was right.
Also, I failed Latin freshman year at college, but that's a whole different story. All right.
On that note.
What are we doing? Let's do some mailbox stuff. Yeah.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
So, Nathan Crawford had this question about getting out of your filter bubble.
Is there a good way to make sure you're bringing in different voices that doesn't simply keep bringing in the same voices? I know the classic, if you read a conservative article, read a liberal one, and vice versa. But what about the voices you don't know you aren't hearing? Could the algorithms of Facebook or Google ever be used to narrow down our options to a better class of reporting?
Well, I think those are two different questions, right? One is how do you get out of your filter bubble? And the other one is how do you get better stuff in your filter bubble, right?
We interviewed this sci-fi author on tech, William Gibson, early on.
Yeah, perhaps you've heard of him.
When we relaunched the show, yes, perhaps you've heard of him. to this day, he remains the strongest argument for Twitter that I've ever heard, which is that he said, the reason that I love Twitter is because it is a place I can access voices I would never otherwise have the chance to hear from. Hmm. And that is, in fact, its value, right? That you can theoretically, and most of us use it in sort of a late, it's like any tool that we're not taking maximum advantage of, like an electric toothbrush or our brains or something. At any point, you can potentially access real, unfiltered thoughts from anywhere in the world and any person in the world, and a person that you might never otherwise interact in with because of your age or your geography or your job or any of the things we talked about mm-hmm. that create the bubble. So there's that.
Hmm.
Just in terms of the voices you don't know you aren't hearing, they're there, and they're not that hard to find. And then in terms of the algorithms being used to narrow down our options, double-edged sword. Like, they can, and they're trying to, and they're, you know, they have all these sort of relevance and reliability metrics that they use to sort of try to elevate certain organizations over the other. But then that leads to, of course, arguments of bias and censorship. So they're sure. in a very tricky spot with that regard.
But that gets us to the censorship thing, right?
It does. Very nicely. Jesse Lex was thinking about how people in countries with a lot of censorship, like the Philippines and Myanmar, can get out of their censored filter bubbles. And he wrote on her Facebook, quote, "Yes, critical reading is important, but apparently so is having multiple affordable avenues to access the internet." Which,
yes.
Yes.
Yes. About that.
Which, yes.
Yes. There you go.
About that, yes. Yeah, which is why, weirdly, why Google and Facebook are trying to beam internet access down from space in places that don't necessarily have a lot of it, which is also tricky.
Yep. All right, so here's a voice memo about tangible advice, I suppose, on keeping things civil in this contentious time in this country. Here it is.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Ian from San Jose, California. My friend and I were discussing how divided the country is these days, and we're trying to come up with a thing or event that would bring us back together. We couldn't think of one. Do you have any thoughts on the matter? Love the show. Thanks.
I do, but this is not going to help. Ready?
Yeah, me too. What's yours?
Okay, mine is the election. That's what they're about.
Really?
Yeah.
Bringing the country back together?
It is the purest expression of what you want, what people in this country want.
Right.
I know that didn't help, and if I were producing this segment right now, I'd hit that dark place thing, but I'm not. So, oh, look, I am. No, I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, right? That an election brings out the dark thing, but that's what the election is for. Now, I know that's not what he meant in the question, so I kind of ducked the spirit of the question, but that's why I am.
I don't know. I weirdly think that's positive. Like, don't take your finger off the dark place sting, because what I was going to say is alien invasion.
Really? Okay, then.
No, I mean, I say this all the time. Like, I'm constantly talking to, you know how you have those certain friends that you just talk about the state of the world with all day, every day? Maybe you don't, but
I don't have any friends, but that's a whole different thing.
What I commonly say is, I don't know what could possibly unify us short of an alien invasion, like short of such a catastrophic event that we are forced to come together for our very basic survival.
The sweet meteor of death. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that.
Anywho.
So, I believe things are not going to get any warmer or fuzzier, because here's the answer to this week's Make Me Smart question. That question, of course, being, what is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? And here's Dan Boss.
Something I thought I knew but later found out I was wrong about was the irreplaceable value of friendship. Essentially, I contended that friendships of a similar mold could be developed anywhere in the world. My callous line of thought was not truly challenged until several years later, when I was a few months into a volunteer position at a university set in a rural community of Bolivia, South America. I developed relationships with Bolivians and fellow volunteers, but these relationships were not comparable to those developed back home. Now I recognize the inherent uniqueness and value each person holds as a justification to spend time with someone when the opportunity arises.
Oh, hey, it was warm and fuzzy.
Well,
friendships matter.
Basically, he's saying you can make friends with anybody and have them matter. And then he discovered that wasn't true.
Anyway, we love this. Please, the thing where you answer the Make Me Smart question is basically our new favorite thing on the show. What is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? Please keep them coming. Email us or send us a voice memo at makemesmart@marketplace.org. I hope at this very moment with all of my heart that Kai is having the most unplugged, delightful vacation ever, and that all of you are having a great Thanksgiving.
I'm Twitter is coming off my phone. I'm shutting email down. Text me if you need me, peeps.
You're going to love it.
Make Me Smart is produced by Sharon Morris. The senior producer is Eve Troh. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. This week's program was engineered by Drew Jostad. Our theme music was composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Juan Satara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. And thank you once again on this Thanksgiving week to all of you. All of you are delightful listeners for making the show so much better every week.
So are you cooking for like a million people?
Yep. That's my jam. At this moment, 1 week before Thanksgiving, however, I am seriously considering ordering dinner from Whole Foods.
Totally.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.